There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
And you are tuned in to CKUT's community news program Off the Hour. We are 23 days into the month of May, and today we begin our week-long series of broadcasts on migration struggles in Montreal and throughout North America. This broadcast will be broadcast in numerous cities. It's being co-presented by CKLN in Toronto, CFRU Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, and of course coordinated here at CKUT through our Community News Collective. Today on Off the Hour, we are going to be featuring the voices of the deported, interviews and reports on immigrants and refugees who have struggled against the Canadian immigration system and paid with the heavy price of deportation from the country. These human stories of migrant struggle remain an inspiration for the ongoing struggles of non-status communities across the country. We're going to be hearing from a number of refugees who have been deported by Canadian immigration officials. This broadcast is taking place in the lead up to the Status for All Solidarity Across Borders demonstrations, which are taking place across the country this Saturday in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, and other cities. And you can find more information about that at solidarityacrossborders.org. If you'd like to get any more information about the programming that you will hear today, or you'd like to get involved or support news here at CKUT, you can contact the Community News Collective. We are at 514-398-6788. That's 514-398-6788. You can also email us at news@ckut.ca. Stay tuned.
Today, the color line is the power line, is the poverty line.
He's an Egyptian refugee who's been living in Montreal, and someone who's been quite active in many social movements in the city since he's been living here. And Amir, you have a deportation date set for this coming Thursday, April the 6th. Can you reflect on this and tell us how you're feeling around this?
So, feeling sometimes I feel that I'm lost. Sometimes I feel good also because I have a lot of support and a lot of friends who are standing beside me in this situation. Sometimes I feel like I have to invest on every minute left before getting deported or before getting detained, in fact. And a mixture of feeling, in fact, yeah. And I don't know how could I describe them all, but this is feeling ranges between different levels of disappointment, mm-hmm. and also strength sometimes to face this disappointment. So mm-hmm. it is something like that.
Where do you get your strength from now in this very difficult situation? What gives you strength?
It's the fact that I got very strong support from some people who I know them 2 years, since 2 years or stuff like that. And the fact that I, in the very difficult situations which I passed before, I tried to isolate myself to some extent from the situation and to start on speculating on my own being, if you could say, to be able to live in a relatively different world. So you feel like, okay, I will try to pass and I will try to get through the situation and I will be okay eventually, like stuff like this. So it is kind of can you call it hilarious strength or psychotic strength? I don't know. It's not necessarily healthy strength, but it's a defensive mechanism, if you could say. If I analyze it, it's kind of defensive mechanism. And also because of I have the support of a lot of people and some friends who are really give me more than what I expected in the situation. So I feel also stronger because of that. This is very important. People in such a situation, they have to feel this close relation with others, and they have to feel that they are not alone. And I think I got this feeling from friends and comrades.
Now, in the last 3 years you've been in Montreal, you've been to numerous demonstrations, you've organized demonstrations, you've spoken out in support of Palestinian refugees here, Algerian refugees, a lot of people involved in Solidarity Across Borders and in the Workers' Solidarity Network. What are your impressions, what are your thoughts on this immigrant and refugee rights movement that you've been an integral part of in Montreal during the last 3 years?
Sometimes I was wondering how could the people get this energy to be able to respond to any small issue, any small battle that fast. And this is surprising, in fact, and I feel like there's so much creative energy in happening. Also stuff about, like, I saw stuff about indigenous people, I saw stuff about Algerian, I saw stuff about Palestinians, I saw direct actions being taken for precarious conditions of work, stuff like that. At the same time, also I thought that the movement, in spite of all of that, still didn't approach a large sector of the directly affected people. So the question for me always was whether it is possible to get through this barriers being established by this system, because, you know, larger directly affected people is in a very precarious situation. They are in a very weak point. If you speak about illegal or non-citizens or refugees, so how can you organize those people? Solidarity Without Borders tried a lot, for example, but still I know the situation is very difficult. Mm-hmm. At certain point when I just came here, I was unwilling and unable to do any organizing stuff or to work on any, and I was feeling so tired, and I was feeling like I need to have a rest, and I need to isolate myself also from any political stuff. So, and my situation was like, if you go and fight on such issues, you could be deported any time, and you will lose your case, and this all was in my mind, and I claimed that I was like politically aware and have some political conscience through my life. So what about people who just came and just willing to live, and they know that the immigration has this strong sword on their neck, they could cut this neck any time. So I know that this is a very hard situation for organizers and activists, and I really appreciate this hard work.
Mm-hmm. Even now, as we draw closer to your deportation date, one thing that I find very interesting is that you're still making the links between your own situation and the situation of other non-status people around you. Why do you feel that it's important to do that, to have that kind of demonstration?
One turning point. You know, I told you that for some time I stayed alone and unwilling to get into this political stuff or get into involvement in struggle or fighting. But one turning point was the story of Sadaf Ali Kahan. I hear it in the radio, and I know some organizers from Solidarity Without Borders like Jega and Sarita before, and I hear on CGED the story of this girl who was deported in spite of the fact that she was the best student in science in her class, and she's only 17 years old, and for one reason or another I felt like I am so connected to this situation, and I have to fight now. I mean, it was like more than you could take as I'm 42, I'm mature, I'm adult, I have done some things in my life, and if I get deported, so in one sense or another I lived. But what about this girl who never lived before, and she just starting her feeling about life and building up hopes and future? Mm-hmm. So it was for me like a very, very aggressive point that the immigration or the system deport people like that, and they don't take into consider this talented or those gifted people, and what could they do for others and for themselves, mm-hmm. and for the society in general. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it for me it is very, very, like I feel like I feel better when I put my story among other stories, and just it is one story of others. The world is full of shit sometimes. So you are not the only one. Maybe this also gave me some kind of strength. We were talking about the sources of strength before.
Yeah. And you wrote an article that's been published called Non-status equals non-human. Can you explain the meaning behind that? I think you're kind of touching on it a bit, but is that how you feel it means to be non-citizen?
I mean, is like I feel like we are completely reduced to one dimension. Good refugee, there is a good refugee, and you know, you remember this irony of the good black is the black, and so, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. The good refugee is not the dead refugee. The good refugee is a slave who accepts being a slave, hoping that one day he will be able to move on, or for losing the hope and falling into the despair of day-to-day life. So if you just put somebody in situations that maybe after 3 years or 4 years you will be able to live like everybody else, I think this is something worse than detention, worse than jailing. So the idea is that I just was trying to explain why this situation is so alienative situation, and what is the economical and power relations and behind that situation, and what discourses are being used to justify such a situation. Which, of course, it is very modest and humble trial, but I just try to touch some dimensions of what I feel and how already I lived 3 years and how what kind of jobs I were obliged to do and what kind of what was my limits in this society. So it is fighting against the limits. It is fighting, it's trying to liberate yourself and to be able to look at yourself in different way than the society is forcing you. Yeah, thanks.
Can you just talk about what you think will happen if you are deported to the United States and then later to Egypt?
I don't remember, but anyway, in the United States I got information that I will be detained. You know, I lived illegally in the United States, so by law I will be detained for how long I don't know. Then from the United States I will go to Egypt to buy travel documents where. Oh, this is different stories. In Egypt, it is you are by law you are not allowed to ask for political asylum in other country because they consider it like you are giving bad impressions about the political system, and according to the Article 77. From the Constitution, you are entitled to be jailed for 2 years if you did that. So it is very vague article, and it could be applied in different ways. In addition, if you are politically activist in one sense or another, of this, you speak out against the Egyptian government. This is what I did here for in some events, so it will be worse, I think. Egypt is one of the most brutal regimes in the Middle East and maybe in the world, and its record of human rights is full of violation of human rights, and which is condemned by a lot of international organizations. So. Are speaking about situation which will be very hard, but I am also relying on my supporters and my friends. This will not pass easily, especially there is also a lot of people in Egypt facing the same situation now, and I'm willing to link also my struggle to them, and lot of journalists, a lot of activists in the street are being fucked up, fucked over every day. Police brutality had reached a higher point of practicing violence. This in custody now is something normal, and it happens to normal people who are not activists or politicians. If the officer or the cop got angry against somebody, he may kill him, and there is no charge for that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reports about that every day now. So I know the situation over there is very aggressive situation, and I'm willing also to create awareness about that.
And just finally, as a last question, is there a message that you would want to pass on, if you had to leave a message with your friends and comrades and people here in Montreal? What would that be?
I just wanna. I'm willing. I hope that I will, or I wish that I will be able to stay to continue fighting this system, and if it is not possible, so I hope that this fight will continue. This is all that I hope, because there is it is a holy fight, if you could say. It deserves that we give energy and we give efforts to save lives, if you could say. Thanks, sir. Thank you.
CKUT, CKLN, and Co-op Radio present Broadcasting Against Borders, a national radio broadcast for May 22nd to 26th, in the lead-up to the Cross Canada Day of Action Status for All on May 27th. Tune in to hear reports, discussions, and interviews on the state of migration in Canada. Powerful stories from the front lines of struggle as immigrants and refugees fight for dignity and the right to stay. On CKUT, tune in to Off the Hour, 5 to 6 p.m. from May 22nd to 26th. Each day, we will bring you coverage from this broadcast. And don't forget the Status for All Day of Action, coast to coast, on May 27th. For more information, call 514-398-6788. Email news@ckut.ca or visit www.solidarityacrossborders.org. No one is illegal.
There has never been an ideal, however humane and peaceful, which in its time has been considered within the law.
Sortez manifester devant les belles demeures des riches. Exigez du travail. S'ils vous donnent pas de travail, réclamez du pain. S'ils vous refusent les deux, prenez le pain. C'est votre droit le plus sacré.
The Emma Goldman Project, a collective multimedia play based on Howard Zinn's Emma, about history, labor, love, and anarchy.
Présenté à l'UQAM le mercredi 24 mai, jeudi 25 mai à 19h au studio Alfred La Liberté, 405 Sainte-Catherine-Est, contribution volontaire.
For more information, contact red-emma at riseup.net.
Ceci est une co-présentation de CKUT.
Bridges to Beirut, Tadamon Montreal's popular event series, May and June 2006. Thursday, May 18th. Screening of Soha Surviving Hell, a cinematic journey into Khayyam Prison of Southern Lebanon. Reading from Lebanese writer Rawi Haj. Performance from musician Hassan El Hadi at Cafe Esperanza, 5490 Saint Laurent, corner of Saint Viateur. Doors 8 p.m. Thursday, May 25th. Entry, Exclusion, and Resistance. Syrian Lebanese Immigration History in Canada. A lecture by Brian Aboud at the School of Community and Public Affairs, 2149 Mackay.
Doors, 7 p.m. Monday, June 5th. Film screening, Leaded on Leaded, The State Unleashed. On the terrace of Casa del Popolo, 4873 Saint-Laurent. Doors, 8:30. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
The media is a story that you tell.
You are the media.
You then are the media.
You now are the media. Are the media.
Find out who you are at CKUT 90.3 FM.
Descent through sound.
Descent through sound. Descent through sound.
Looking for media and
its reflection.
Descent through sound.
Join us for general orientation every third Thursday, 12, 3, and 6 p.m.
3647 University, CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, they're very shrewd. I must say they're really quite remarkable in their ability to use the media.
Friday, June 25th, a solidarity demonstration was held outside of the Montreal offices of Citizenship and Immigration Canada in support of Shamim Akhtar and her family's struggle against deportation from Canada. Shamim Akhtar and her husband Naeem Khan and their daughters Sadaf and Sadia and their sons Sean and Samir continue to face deportation amidst a public and political struggle against their removal. The family was refused as refugee claimants in Montreal in August of 2002, despite the grave risks they face if deported to Pakistan, either directly or indirectly through the United States. In Karachi, Pakistan, the family, Shiite Muslims, were the direct targets of the militant sectarian organization, the SSP. Naeem was beaten and brutalized several times, including once with bicycle chains, while Shamim and her daughters were held at gunpoint in their homes. The family came to Canada in the hopes of finding a more humane refugee determination system, affording them the protection they sought and deserved. The refugee hearing took place in August of 2002. Since being refused refugee status in Canada, the Akhtar Khan family has been leading the fight against Pakistani deportations from Canada. CKUT Radio spoke with Amir Kadir, a political activist in Montreal who works with Doctors Without Borders, at the June 25th rally against the Akhtar Khan family's deportation.
I am Dr. Amir Kadir from Union des Forces Progressistes, member of Union des Forces Progressistes. We are gathered, a group of around 40 people, to denounce the possible deportation, expulsion from Canada of a family of Pakistani people who have been living here for more than 2 years, whose children are already partly adapted here, have learned French, moreover, who have been active in issues concerning other Pakistanis who have been very vocal in demanding Canada to recognize the fact that there exists a violence, interconfessional and political violence of important scale in Pakistan, and many people are menaced and are threatened by this situation, especially those who have had political involvement in the past, who are involved in the defense of the rights of their communities in Pakistan. And due to the American intervention in the region, Pakistan is now a hotbed of confessional and political unrest. We know that more than 60 people have been victim in the past 2-3 years, professionals, physicians, have been victim of this interconfessional violence, which is in fact a violence with political involvement. And in this regard, it's dangerous for them to be deported. Especially, this family is coming from Karachi, and Karachi is the most violent city now in Pakistan. Just recently, there has been a big bomb attack which killed many Shiites, many members of the Shiite community in Pakistan. So in this context, pretending that there is no problem for this family just shows the total insensitivity and ignorance of the officials and the commissioners that have signed their order of expulsion. Moreover, when we know, you know, the case of Maher Arar, for example, the case of the refugees that we have expelled to the United States and who have been sent back home and then somehow have been tortured to extort information for U.S. authorities, we should be very open in front of our people, and the Canadian government should say, yes, we agree that the United States subcontracts other countries to torture individuals in order to get information. Do we agree as Canadians with that? No, I think. And the people gathered here today are here just to say that.
No one is illegal. No one. No one is illegal.
We are in a post-September 11 context where the security delirium, the security propaganda waged by the United States in order to justify its foreign policy in the Middle East has just done that, profiling and putting all the focus on people from Middle East and Western Asia in order to justify the restraints put on civil liberties here and to justify big military and security expenses, which are instruments of U.S. domination around the world. So the people from my country, for example, Iran, Palestine, Afghanistan, the Arab world, and the Pakistan are unfortunately the first victims of this racial profiling, which is just a propaganda instrument to indulge the Canadian public opinion to the fact that they are threatened by some global threat coming from our people.
You have just heard an interview with Amir Kadir, a political activist in Montreal who works with Doctors Without Borders. The interview was recorded at the June 25th rally against the Akhtar Khan family's deportation from Montreal. CKUT Radio also spoke with Ali Hassani, an organizer with the Action Committee of Pakistani Refugees, about the family's struggle against deportation and the larger Pakistani community's fight against removals. Currently in Montreal, there are hundreds of Pakistani refugees facing deportation in the coming weeks and months.
Right now, in Pakistan, as you can see from the media and from all the news, the terrorism is on the highest. There are people being killed on the street. The worship places are being bombed. And what we are demanding from Government of Canada, that they should put a moratorium on all the deportation of Pakistan till the situation cools off there and we evaluate to see if the lives are more safe if they are sent back. I think what we are...
We pledge resistance.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal here on CKUT.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
Yes, 1-2-1-2. Oh yeah, see, Nomadic Massive in the place to be. You're listening to CKUT 90.3. Understand?
Majid, a stateless Palestinian born and raised in Ain al-Helwe refugee camp in southern Lebanon, was deported by immigration authorities from Canada. The distance between Montreal and Lebanon stretches thousands of kilometers over oceans and continents, but remains only a short distance in Ahmed's eyes, and living memory of an existence shaped by the daily struggle of statelessness. Today, Ahmed resides in Ain al-Helwe, with an estimated 80,000 other stateless Palestinians, in the country's largest refugee camp, located on the outskirts of the southern Lebanese city of Saida. Ain al-Helwe is a stark example of the lived reality of persecution that Palestinian refugees face today in Lebanon. Ain al-Helwe is a Palestinian ghetto, a social and economic prison for tens of thousands of refugees displaced by the creation of the State of Israel. The entire camp and its thousands of residents are restricted to approximately 2 square kilometers and completely surrounded by Lebanese military checkpoints, which deny Palestinians freedom of movement. To enter or exit the camp, Palestinians are forced to show their UN-issued refugee identity documents to Lebanese soldiers, enforcing a physical and psychological control over Palestinian movement. Military control over Palestinians in Ain al-Helwe symbolizes broader social and economic oppression enforced by laws and regulations of the Lebanese state, which undermine the basic survival of Palestinians. Forbidden from owning property, working in over 70 professions, and legally defined as foreigners, Palestinians live in Lebanon as second-class citizens, without any basic social or political rights. We will now hear an interview recorded in Beirut, Lebanon, with Ahmed Abdel Majid, in which he reflects on his experiences organizing against Palestinian deportations from Canada, with the Coalition Against the Deportation of Palestinian Refugees in Montreal, while also addressing the current realities facing Palestinian refugees in Lebanon.
My name is Ahmed Abdel Majid, a Palestinian from Ain al-Helwe camp, which is located in the south of Lebanon. It contains about 75,000 of Palestinian people.
I have a big family. I have 6 brothers, 1 sister. My father is old, and also my mother is old. And now I'm studying in Arab University in Beirut. I have a bad problem to get the money to study in university. So me and all the Palestinian people, they are bad conditions that Palestinian refugees are trying in Helwe, that no one can ignore it. And we have tried doing a lot of meetings and concert projects about human rights and the rights of the Palestinian people, refugee, to work. Actually, we are forbidden from having 75 professions. We are persecuted from the Lebanese government that no one can get permission to work. Right now, I feel that I'm a persecuted in Lebanon, that I don't have a civil rights, I don't have a right to work, I don't have anything. Like, I'm feeling like same as like an animal, that I don't have any rights, just living in a small camp, and there's no human rights, there's nothing to deal with it.
The camp itself, Ain Helwe, it's probably one of the most crowded camps. Can you maybe describe, like, how do the streets look? How are the buildings looking? How is the plumbing, the sewage, the electricity?
There is two main streets, one lower street and one upper street. And there is, like, small buildings in the middle of the camp. There is no electricity, just 2 hours per day. And there is a sewage wall in the street. And there is bad conditions for living in the summer. There is no air condition, there is nothing. I live with my family in a small house. I and 7 brothers live in a small house. We have a bad conditions. Me and my family try with another community that help Palestinian people to get a right to work, to get good conditions for people living in the camp. We're trying to work with civil communities and democratic communities to get our rights in Lebanon.
Do you see the struggle for Palestinian rights in Lebanon as part of the bigger struggle for Palestine? You know, today, throughout the world, people are demonstrating for Palestine in Canada, in France, in South Africa. Across the world, people are demonstrating for Palestine. Do you see the struggle of Palestinian refugees in Lebanon as part of that?
Yeah, the same, because the Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, Canada, all over the world are the same. We don't have a land, we don't have a right to live in Lebanon or in over the world. We are living as a refugee. We are persecuted people. So I remember that my family came to Lebanon in 1948. My grandfather came to Lebanon and his wife. So my father was born in Lebanon in 1950, and also my mother was born in 1954, and all my brothers and sisters were born in Lebanon.
So as a Palestinian in Lebanon, and having lived in the situation you described, you can't work in so many professions and so on, what do you propose to change? Like, what should be changed in terms of the Palestinian refugee situation in Lebanon? What are you demanding as a Palestinian?
So, because there are people who don't have a country for themselves, and also because a lot of them ended up in Lebanon without basic civil rights and not even the right to work for more than 75 professions. So as a human being, I have a right to live, and I have a civil rights, but as I'm a Palestinian in Lebanon, I don't have any rights to respect with the law, in the Lebanese law, that I'm a Palestinian. I can't get a permission to work, I can't get any permission to live, I can't go to the hospitals, I need to pay, so I don't have any rights.
So because of the situation that you're describing in Lebanon, you chose in 2001 to leave Lebanon. So maybe can you talk about that decision to leave? You came to Canada and applied refugee status. What made you make that decision to get up from your family, get up from everything that you knew that was familiar, and come to Canada? What made you decide that?
In 1999, I finished my baccalaureate. I tried to enter university, but I can't, because I can't pay $5,000 a year, per year, to continue my studying school. So I have a cousin in the United States. He helped me to get an I-20 from the university. Then I applied for United States Embassy in Lebanon. So I got a visa, I traveled to the States, and then I entered Canada and applied for other refugee status. So the main reason that I can't continue my studies in Lebanon, because I have to pay. When I wanted to travel, I had a bad feeling that I want to leave my family, but there's no way just to travel, because I need to continue my studies, I need to help my family. All my uncles are dead during the civil war, the Lebanese civil war. They are killed by the Lebanese military, and there's no one can help me, just myself. I heard about Canada, there's a human right, there's right if you went to Canada, you can't work, you can't study, you can't do everything. The government, they can pay for you, can give you a monthly payment, so you can do everything. And after 3 years or 4 years, you can get a citizen as a refugee. So I went there and applied as a refugee status.
You just talked a little bit about what your idea was of Canada before coming to Canada, when you were still in Lebanon looking to Canada and what you thought it was. Can you describe what your feeling was when you came as a refugee to Canada? What were you thinking when you were at the border from the United States?
I stayed 3 months in the United States, and then I went to the border. So when I was at the border, Canadian border, I felt happy. No one asked me for an ID. No one asked me for a passport. Just stay inside and fill up the papers as a refugee. Then he told me enter the city alone. I stopped the bus and entered the city, and no one talked to me. From the first day or from the first moment, I felt as a free man.
Well, this was coming to Montreal. So talk about what you felt. You're walking around Montreal. It was a new city. You weren't familiar with anything. Everything was new. You'd come from a camp in the south of Lebanon to Montreal. It's a big change, right? Like, how did you feel? What were you thinking? Like, were you remembering back home and the change? And
it was really a big change and a big thing in my life that I left the camp and went to Canada. When I was walking in the streets in Montreal, I was feeling a happy man that I'm seeing a new building, new streets, new life. There's a new people. And most of the communities over there are interested in the case of the Palestinian refugee.
In your first months in Montreal, what did you do? Were you calling home often to talk to your family? Because you must have felt like you were in two. One side of you was in Canada and one side of you was in Lebanon.
Yeah. From the first day, like, I called my family and I swear to God that I didn't want to come back to Lebanon because I'm feeling a free man. Finally, I got my liberty.
So you said before that you were at the border and you made the papers to claim refugee status in Canada. So talk about how that went from the beginning. What was the process that you experienced?
When I was at the border, I met a man in the border and told him that where's the Canadian border, where's the office for the refugees people. And he told me where is. And when I entered the office, like, there is like four or five people work in the office, and I asked them that I need to apply a refugee status. So then they gave me an application, and I fill up like four or five papers, and I fill up the application and waited like 4 or 5 hours. They give me an IDs, like Canadian IDs, as a refugee, and let me enter the city.
You had to write your whole life story in 3 or 4 pages, everything that you experienced, you know, your family's history, fleeing Palestine, living in the conditions that exist in Ain Helwi, with the living conditions, the lack of electricity, the lack of work. And that whole experience that you have as a Palestinian, you had to put into a couple of lines on refugee papers. Was that difficult? How do you translate from everything that you lived, everything that you experienced, into the forms of the Canadian government?
Yeah, there's 4 or 5 papers that not of them I need to fill up. But actually there is information about ID, my ID, like my name, my family name, my father's name, and information about my family, where they live, your address, or something like that. And there's one page that I need to make a short story about my life, why I need to apply for a refugee status. Really, I felt afraid when I applied as a refugee status, and I wrote about my story that I felt no one lived like Palestinian people in the camp. There is this strange people. No one knows about them. I felt afraid when I applied about my own story, because I'm living as a persecuted person in the camp that I don't have a right. Like, I have a humanitarian story. I applied for the human I probably don't to get 75 professions that I don't have a civil rights, I don't have that. I need to talk about these conditions on my own story.
So do you think that just this fact, the facts about Lebanon and the conditions in Lebanon of Palestinians, this just on its own was the basis of your refugee claim and many other Palestinians? Do you think that that is enough in terms of applying for a refugee in Canada? Do you think that if any Palestinian that came from Lebanon to Canada to claim refugee status, do you think that they should be given papers?
Yeah, because all the Palestinian people are persecuted in Lebanon, that they don't have rights. So all of them like the same. But they have the same conditions. So all the Palestinian people are the same. All of them live in the same camp. They live in Al Hilwi. All of them live in the same camp. All of them have the small houses, have no electricity. There is a sewage water on the street. There's no conditions to live in the camp. So I'm a human being. Like, I need a human conditions to live. I don't have any human conditions in Lebanon. I feel afraid that I'm sitting in front of the judge. This is the first time of my life I sit in front of a judge. He always asked me about my own story. Like, he didn't believe me, and I'm telling him true story. And I told him that if he didn't believe me, he can ask the Lebanese government, can ask the Canadian embassy in Lebanon, that's true or not.
And how did you feel about your whole life being judged by this one person, this one Canadian, who had never traveled to the camps, who'd never been in Lebanon?
I had a bad feeling that I should tell him all my story in like a few minutes, 20 or 30 minutes. I need to tell him about all my life. I need time. I need like at least 1 week to tell him about all my story. I need to bring him a document. Also, I brought him a document about the situation of Palestinian refugees in Lebanon. He didn't give any care about Palestinian camps in Lebanon, about Ain Helwi, about the problems, the civil problems.
The morning that you received the paper that said that you were refused, and how you felt when you read that?
Just one line, just short answer, that you are refused because you have the same conditions as the Palestinian refugee in Lebanon. Well, I didn't believe that. Really, I didn't believe. At that time, I called my lawyer and told him that it's true or not that I got refused from the court.
After you were refused refugee status in Canada as a Palestinian, what did you do? What did you want to do?
I applied for another court, but also they refused. Then I applied as a PRRA. And also after 2 months, they refused me. When I applied the PRRA, someone with the immigration called me at my house and gave me an appointment to meet him in his office. There is a lady, her name, I forgot her name, and I told her that I already got married from a Canadian woman. She told me that even if you get married and have children, we will support you. You have 2 months to leave Canada. And exactly after 2 months, I get deportation. When I got my letter from the court that I was refused, I have a bad feeling that all my friends get acceptance and me are refused, and other Palestinian people are refused. So I asked my lawyer that what I need to do. She told me that to apply for a PRRA, and then you need to work to get money to pay for the lawyer, and you have at least 1 year or 2 years to get deportation. But when I applied for a PRRA and I got a new job like 1 month before, after I applied the PRRA like 1.5 months, I got deportation, and you give me at least 15 days to leave Canada.
So when you were working in Canada, what were you doing? What were your jobs?
I was working in an Arabic restaurant in downtown. First of all, I was working as a dishwasher. Then I worked as a chef. I was cooking in the restaurant. When I was working in the Arabic restaurant, I met so many Canadian people, and I have friends, Canadian people, as friends.
But the government of Canada refused you refugee status. How did that make you feel about Canada? You described Canada before you came. Yeah. After you were refused, how did your idea of the government change?
I hate the government, first of all, but after that, I have chance to apply as a PRA and humanitarian and to have a lawyer, but when I got protection, my opinion is changed. I was still love Canada. When I was in Canada, I loved here more when I got deportation, because I was a free man. I have a right to fight to get my papers in Canada.
Now, you chose to organize with other Palestinians and were one of the first people that started the Coalition Against the Deportation of Palestinian Refugees in Montreal. So why was it that you made that choice to get involved and to fight for your papers?
Because there is no solution. Also, like, I get deportation before 15 days, and I don't have any solution, just to fight to get my own papers. So I met Palestinian guys that work with human rights. So there is only solution to work with them to get my own papers.
And working with people and other Palestinians who are in the same situation as you, how did you feel?
It's a good feel, because all of them work on the same case, and all of them try to help each other, make a good relation, like brothers. All the world is my land, because I don't have any land. If I went to anywhere, it would be my land, because I don't have a land as a Palestinian people, and all the world is my land. Because the first country I go is Canada. If I go to Germany or Belgium, or it will be my land. The first country I will apply the refugee status, and I don't have right to apply in another country. That's first time. The judge told me that you are not allowed to apply as a refugee status because you are applied in Lebanon as a refugee status. I told him I'm not applying a refugee status in Lebanon. I didn't apply a refugee status in Lebanon. I born as a refugee status. There's a big difference. I born as a refugee.
Having been born as a refugee in Lebanon and being stateless, you feel that it's the duty of a country like Canada to give a stateless Palestinian papers?
Yeah, it's a duty for the Canadian government to give the Palestinian people.
Talk about what you did in the Coalition Against the Deportation of Palestinian Refugees. Why did you put so much time and so much energy and so much effort into being involved?
This is the only way to get my papers, first of all. And also, I heard about the Algerian people that they were fighting for more 2 years, and finally they got their papers. And I hope to be like them, to get my papers after fighting. But finally I got deportation, and they deported me to the United States.
And fighting, meaning what? What did you do in the coalition? What types of things did you organize? What were you asking from the Canadian government?
I've tried to express my situation in Lebanon, to explain for all the Canadian people about Palestinian situation, about the bad condition that they were living in camps, and about the human rights of Palestinian people, and about my own rights to apply as a refugee status and to get my paper in Canada. I had demonstration and petitions, and I had workshops on human rights of Palestinian people and make many demonstrations.
You were very involved in organizing in the Coalition Against the Deportation of Palestinian Refugees. So in the weeks before your deportation...
Just 1 week before I get deportation, or before I deported from Canada, I fill up my humanitarian application, and just a few days after I will send it to the government, but they catch me in my job and deported me.
C CKUT, CKLN, and Co-op Radio present Broadcasting Against Borders, a national radio broadcast from May 22nd to 26th, in the lead-up to the Cross Canada Day of Action Status for All on May 27th. Tune in to hear reports, discussions, and interviews on the state of migration in Canada. Powerful stories from the front lines of struggle as immigrants and refugees fight for dignity and the right to stay. On CKUT, tune in to Off the Hour, 5 to 6 p.m., from May 22nd to 26th. Each day, we will bring you coverage from this broadcast. And don't forget the Status for All Day of Action, coast to coast, on May 27th. For more information, call 514-398-6788. Email news@ckut.ca or visit www.solidarityacrossborders.org. No one is illegal.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is there is this thing? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
And you have been listening to CKUT's community news program Off the Hour. We are 23 days into the month of May, and this was the first program of a week-long series of broadcasts on migration struggles in Montreal and throughout North America. This broadcast has been coordinated between CKUT Radio here in Montreal, CKLN Radio in Toronto, and CFRU Cooperative Radio in Vancouver. This special broadcast throughout the week will be taking place in the lead-up to the Status for All Cross-Country Day of Action on May 27th, which is demanding for the immediate regularization of all non-status people living across the country.